And good morning. Happy to be with you. Happy to be back. Been gone a couple of Sundays. Susie Jones here, Josh Wheeler at the helm. Josh, good morning. How are you?
I'm great. Good morning.
You are a little sleepy. You told me you
didn't sleep. A little tired, yeah.
Well, that happens.
The rare nights that I don't get sleep, I think I'm almost batting 1,000 with good nights of sleep, and last night just wasn't one of them.
Well, you just punch through. That's what I say. Keep your head
correct.
Going. Keep working. Keep hitting buttons. Well, we're happy to have you with us here on this Sunday morning. Again, we're talking all things health as we do each and every Sunday morning, and we always invite you to be a part of the show at 651-461-9226. And we're going to talk this morning about something that is near and dear to my heart, and that is the effort to end lung cancer. That's right. There's a walk coming up next weekend. Walk, run, and rally to end lung cancer. And it's happening in Minneapolis. And we're going to talk about the run. But we're also going to talk about lung cancer itself. And maybe you've had it or been touched by it. As you know, I have. And I'm happy to be alive. I should say that every day. We all should say that every day. But I feel particularly grateful and particularly affected. I'm not going to lie. This smoke that we've had lately has really impacted my lungs, and it's felt quite uncomfortable at times, and I feel kind of lightheaded. And so what we've done this hour is just sort of set up an hour of talking about lung cancer prevention, lung cancer treatment, and more about the walk. So we'll welcome to the program Dr. Manish Patel. He is with us on our news line. Good morning, Dr. Patel.
Good morning.
Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
On this early morning. And we also have in studio Terry Cannon, Executive Director of A Breath of Hope, an organization dedicated to research and education, support for people that have had lung cancer, sort of the mission of education, of dispelling some of the misconceptions about lung cancer. Because, Dr. Patel, I'll tell you that I had lung cancer, and it was diagnosed and found, I should say, by a car accident. So I think they call that, I don't know, there's some unintentional diet, you know, you bump into it and go, woo, there it is. But the first thing people said to me when I had lung cancer is, oh, did you smoke? Like, this is supposed to sort of justify or explain or make it my fault. Like, well, if it's your fault, then you deserve to die or you deserve to be sick. So there's a lot of stigma around it, isn't there? And I'll start with Dr. Patel.
Yeah, for sure there is. There has been. I think it's maybe getting a little bit better, thanks in large part to, groups like A Breath of Hope really trying to get the message out there that this isn't only about cigarette smoking. And even if it was, you know, it's not nobody really deserves to suffer from this disease.
No, absolutely not. And your work is in lung cancer, right? You're in an oncologist, is that correct?
That's right. So, yeah, I'm at the University of Minnesota Masonic Cancer Center, and clinically I see patients with lung cancer, but a lot of all of my research really focuses on patients with lung cancer.
Okay, very good. And before we get into the meat of it, we're talking about 4 or 5 days now of this air quality alert. And what do you make of all the smoke? And is there a fear, or is it already known there's a correlation between wildfire smoke and lung cancer, or have we not made that connection?
I don't think we know that wildfire smoke per se is associated with lung cancer, but we do know that particulate inhalants, whether that be pollution, whether it be wildfire smoke, certainly can contribute to lung cancer risk. So all of these environmental exposures that we have, that we breathe in, go directly into our lungs. And so, hydrocarbons around the campfire, if it's like everyday kind of more chronic exposure, we know that that's going to be probably going to lead to a higher risk of developing lung cancer. So I think it does concern me that we have all this smoke exposure. I'm, in some ways, not fearful of it, but on the other hand, if it becomes like a chronic everyday issue, I think it's going to become a major health factor.
Yeah, I was going to say, I wonder if, and I don't mean to go down this this path for just a minute if we could, but the idea of studying it, because, you know, if climate change and these wildfires are going to be a regular part of our summers, then it might come to pass that you would have to look at looking at the ramifications of it long term.
Yeah, I mean, I think would be somewhat difficult to study, I think, and it takes a long time to get that kind of data. But yeah, I mean, you could look at the air quality index measures and look at rates of developing lung cancer in different areas with different air quality indices as a kind of a loose measure of risk.
Yeah, we're in a new world, certainly. 651-461-9226. We're talking about lung cancer this hour. As I mentioned, I had it in 2021, and it was removed January 7th, 2022. And I am eternally grateful to the doctors at the Mayo Clinic who took off a third of my right lobe, Dr. Patel. but I'm super grateful because I'm here and I'm happy and I get a CT every 6 months. So, but we want to talk about lung cancer and lung cancer treatment. How far have we come in lung cancer treatment? When we first walked in the studios here, Dr. Patel, my colleague Al Schock mentioned to Terry Cannon here, the executive director of A Breath of Hope, who's in studio, that many of her family members, when he was a child, died of lung cancer. We've come a long way in fatality, right? Morbidity?
Yeah, it's really been a dramatic change from when I started my career. I graduated from medical school in 2001, and really at that time, if you were diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer, you know, the expected survival was somewhere between 6 and 9 months. And I think the remarkable thing is that we had very few options for treatment. It was just chemo or a different chemo. And it didn't really matter which one you used. They were all the same in terms of expected survival. And I think since I started on faculty in 2010, after I finished all of my training, every year, and quite literally every year, there have been new therapies approved. We've understood that there are different subtypes of lung cancer that we can treat with very specific agents that are both much safer and also much more effective. And, you know, I have a fairly reasonable-sized cadre of patients now that are off of any treatment, in the early 2000s would have expected only to live 6 or 9 months, but they're off of treatment 7, 8 years after they were diagnosed. So things have made a really marked turnaround in terms of that. Certainly not out of the woods. I mean, many people still die of lung cancer, so we've got a lot of work still left to do, but the situation is so much better than it was 15 years ago.
It is 17 minutes past 7 o'clock on a Sunday morning. We're talking about lung cancer treatment, a walk coming up. And in studio, I have Terry Cannon, Executive Director of A Breath of Hope, just a fantastic organization that I volunteer at. Dr. Manish Patel, also from the University of Minnesota, an oncologist, talking about lung cancer treatment. And we've invited you as well to be a part of the show at 651-461-9226. We'll be back with much more after this on News Talk 830-WCCO. And we are back. It is 7:22 on a Sunday morning. Just wrapping up this air quality alert. I can't wait till it's done. Ugh, I hate it. And then it's going to be 100 and... No, that's true.
It is going to warm up this week.
It is. Yeah. Josh Wheeler, Terry Cannon, Executive Director of Breath of Hope, and Dr. Manish Patel. We're talking about lung cancer this morning and a walk that's coming up. We're also going to get to calls at 651-461-9226, of which we have some, so we will get to them. But Terry, I thought you could jump in for a minute. This is a walk every year. It's at Lake Harriet.
Lake Harriet at the Banshell.
And I went last year. It was just amazing. The people that showed up, I'm sure Dr. Patel will be there, I hope. But anyway, unfortunately, I'm not going to be there this year, and I'm so sad. But talk about the walk. And you say it's the biggest fundraiser for the organization?
It is the biggest fundraiser for the organization, and I've got ways that you can still participate.
Oh, really?
Susie.
Okay.
Yeah. So this event, it's called the Lung Cancer Walk and Run, and people can walk, run, and rally. So even if you've got lung cancer and you're worried about walking around the lake and you don't want to exert that effort, especially if there's still smoke in the air, still come and be part of the festivities, the activities, and rally. And there's plenty of benches in front of the band shell so you can stay and stay in the village, in the Hope Village, and participate in the activities. Wear a mask, take care of your own health. But no matter what, whether you come to walk, run, rally, or even if you can't be there, please sign up and donate. We need people to invest in A Breath of Hope so that we can in turn invest in research, education, and support.
And Terry, I did not tell you I was going to ask you this, but I am going to ask you this, and I'm sure you're a professional and you can handle this question. What is the difference between A Breath of Hope and like American Lung Association? Are they very different? Are they very similar?
You know, there's overlaps. We're both patient advocacy organizations, and American Lung Association does a lot of great work. They talk to people about smoking cessation, and they also support other lung diseases, COPD, asthma, lung cancer. Well, where A Breath of Hope is a lung cancer foundation, a Breath of Hope Lung Cancer Foundation. We only focus on lung cancer, not other lung diseases.
Very good. And that's important in that you really can put all your resources into areas like screening, you mentioned.
Yes. Yes. So screening is one of the ways that we want to impact survival rates by encouraging people to go in and get screened. And we know that we wish that anyone could get screened for lung cancer the same way that you could go in and when you're 40 and you're a woman, go get a mammogram. When you're 50, go get a colonoscopy. We want people to be able to get lung cancer screening too. But unfortunately, right now, the only way to qualify for screening is if you are between 50 and 80 and have a smoking history.
A big smoking history, not a little smoking history.
Not a little smoking history. So current smokers have quit within the last 15 years and have a 20-pack history, which either means smoking a pack a day for 20 years or two packs a day for 10 years. Mm. So it's kind of a barrier to get that screening.
What's the chance of opening it up? Is it tough?
Well, that's one of the reasons why patient advocacy organizations are so important is because we advocate to increase that eligibility for screening. That's our job. What we want to do is at least make sure that the people who are eligible, that are currently eligible, get screened. And in Minnesota right now, that's less than 10% of people who are eligible are getting screened. So we need to raise that rate too, and simultaneously increase the eligibility.
How do you know who is eligible? I mean, is there like a database that shows how many people smoke that much?
Well, that's where primary care comes in. Mm. When you go in for your wellness visits on an annual basis to see your primary care doctor, be sure to advocate for yourself. If your doctor forgets to ask you about screening, because lung cancer isn't built into the system to ask for screening, but if you can advocate and say you have a smoking history and you'd like to be screened, that's the first step. Be a good advocate.
Be a good advocate. Tell people the truth so that you can live a long, healthy life. 651-461-9226. We're talking about lung cancer this morning. That was Terry Cannon, Executive Director of A Breath of Hope, on our newsline, Dr. Manish Patel, talking about lung cancer and the research that's being done to prevent and treat lung cancer so that people can go on to have longer lives. And the past had been sort of a death sentence if you had stage 4 lung cancer. And we've invited you to jump in as well. We have a text question from a listener. Good morning. Can lung cancer be hereditary? I wonder that too. Dr. Patel, can you address that?
I think certainly it can be. We know that there are patients who've had a family history of lung cancer are more likely than the population to get a new lung cancer. We haven't pinned it down like we have with other hereditary cancer syndromes, so there's no name to that syndrome. But we think, at least I think, that the ability to metabolize carcinogens may lead to a, you know, may be hereditary. And so if you have somebody who's a family member who's had lung cancer, you know, you might share that same metabolism capacity. And so you might be at a higher risk than the average population. As of the current time, there's no,
correlation.
There's no clear understanding of what that is. But we certainly see it in families that, you know, have had multiple people in their family that have had lung cancer.
It's interesting because I think a lot of people look at people who smoke, and maybe someone has smoked their entire lives and they're 95 and they're still smoking, whereas a 45-year-old person might get smoke and then get lung cancer. So how
So there are differences in those two people, right? So the 90-year-old that doesn't that smokes but never gets cancer probably has some kind of ability to metabolize those things so they don't cause as much problems. And so I think it, you know, it just gets to the point that it's much more complicated than just cigarette smoking. It's certainly exposure to carcinogens and how your body can handle it.
You know, and that brings me to the next question from a texter. Please talk about radon and lung cancer risk. That's another piece of the educational puzzle that we're talking about. What about radon, and are we paying enough attention to it?
Well, I think we know that radon is probably the single largest environmental factor that increases the risk for lung cancer. And it's particularly important in Minnesota. We have a lot of radon in the ground. And so many homes are contaminated with radon. I think it doesn't get as much attention as it deserves. You know, it's fairly straightforward to get radon vented out of your basement if you have it. But I think, you know, certainly the testing for radon doesn't happen as readily as maybe it could.
All right.
It's fairly easy to get a kit. The Minnesota Department of Health will give you a free kit to measure, and then you send it in the mail. They send you back the results, and then if you want to do radon abatement, there are many companies that will do that for you.
Very good. 651-461-9226. Another great text question coming in. I'm 87 years old and I've lived with a smoker my life. What about secondhand smoke?
Certainly secondhand smoke is also one of the risk factors. So it's again about that exposure to carcinogens that we think is probably the most important. Secondhand smoke, you know, increases the risk of lung cancer twofold compared to the general population. So it's not the 20-fold increased risk that direct cigarette smoking does cause, but certainly it's a risk factor. And so if you are a smoker and you have lived with other family, I mean, I would suggest that you try stepping outside onto the deck or on the balcony. Wherever you are outside, so that you're not affecting the rest of your family.
Very good. We're going to take our bottom of the hour break right now. It is 7:31 on News Talk 830 WCCO. We're talking about lung cancer with Dr. Manish Patel from the University of Minnesota and Terry Cannon, the executive director of A Breath of Hope, an organization dedicated to lung cancer prevention, education, research. And we'll take more of your questions as well at 651-461-9226 right after this. We are back for the second half of this hour talking about lung cancer. We have with us on our newsline Dr. Manish Patel, University of Minnesota lung cancer oncologist, also in studio Terry Cannon, executive director of A Breath of Hope, and your phone calls and your text questions always welcome at 651-461-9226, 651-461-9226. This person wonders, it's kind of a longer text question, Josh. I think the essence of it, though, is that they had pneumonia as a child, parents were smokers, and wonders about the possibility that their lungs have been compromised. Never had a CT scan or a scan. Just wondering, I think the idea of that kind of an environment and as an adult, what's the likelihood of them developing cancer?
Boy, it's really hard to say. I mean, I think, you know, the exposure to secondhand smoke as a child probably does increase their risk somewhat. I don't think having pneumonia as a child really makes, you know, is particularly a higher risk. You know, as it stands, you know, people with exposure to secondhand smoke don't really qualify for screening. So this is where we talk about it. You know, Susie, you would never have gotten diagnosed with lung cancer had you not had a CT scan for that other reason.
And I never would have been, just to add, it was quite a pivotal moment in my history in that my mother insisted that I get a chest x-ray after the car accident because of the severity of it, because I was hit pretty hard. And that actual x-ray, chest x-ray, showed the shadow that then prompted the CT, that then prompted the PET scan, which I hated.
Yeah, so the common thing that most people don't really get is that, you know, if you had an early stage lung cancer where we can cure it, you'll never know it unless we see it on an image. And, you know, it doesn't cause symptoms when it's very early. So, you know, most of the time, if we are seeing a patient with an early stage lung cancer, it's because it's not because they have symptoms or it's because they got a scan for some other reason. And this is close to me as well. It happened to my mother. She had a bad flu, a case of the flu.
Yeah.
And it just was taking a long time to recover. And so her doctor ordered a CT scan to take a look. She was better by the time she got the CT scan scheduled. And so she was almost going to cancel it. And my dad really convinced her, why don't you go ahead and do it? And that's when she found her lung nodule. And, you know, 5 years ago, she had it cut out. And so she's doing well today because of that.
That's fantastic.
And she's a lifelong never smoker. So, you know, I think of the
so random
that we're trying to say is that, you know, it doesn't matter who you are. If you have lungs, you could get lung cancer. And so it's a little bit difficult in our current environment to say, like, everybody should get a CT scan at any time. But, you know, I think we're in a place where we want to try to move towards, you know, increasing the number of patients, people that we can screen, because we know we have a technology that's fairly simple and straightforward, relatively inexpensive vis-a-vis other screening methods to detect cancer early and catch it early where we can still cure it.
You know, along those lines, before we took the break, Dr. Patel, Terry and I were talking off air about the importance of talking about biomarkers so that once you have that screening, then what do you do in the treatment of lung cancer? So as you say, a lot of people in the old days would say, oh, I have stage four, I'm a goner, but not really. Can you kind of talk about once you have a patient that presents with lung cancer, what are you looking for in the treatment?
Yeah, so as I mentioned before, all of those therapies that we talked about, the advances have come largely because we've identified that not all lung cancer is the same. So we now know that if you have a particular DNA mutation, that you might respond better to a certain treatment. And we know that this is true in advanced cancer, but it's especially true if you have early stage cancer. So we are seeing now that if we know what subtype of lung cancer that you have, we can really tailor the treatment to each specific patient and really offer them the best benefit. So we are definitely need to know what the presence of these mutations or not, if they are present or not, before we start treatment, so we can offer the best treatment to every patient.
And you say mutations, biomarkers, are they one and the same?
Yeah, so there's many different biomarkers. So there's probably at least 17 or 18 genes that we'd want to test for that we have specific therapies for. And those are gene mutations that are looking at the DNA of the cancer. And then there are also markers on the cancer cells itself. So we look for different proteins that can maybe tell us if you're more likely or not to respond to immunotherapy, whether you need chemotherapy or not. So there's a wide variety of markers that we want to look at for each patient.
And the differences between, obviously, chemotherapy is pretty harsh. Is immunotherapy less harsh?
Yeah, it certainly can be. I mean, for most patients who get immunotherapy, the side effects are virtually none. You can certainly get bad toxicity from immunotherapy, so I don't want to say that it's you know, super easy. But for most patients, if you don't get these toxicities, they're just living their life like normal and, you know, come in for a 1 hour infusion and then the rest of their time is just their own.
This biomarker stuff sounds pretty groundbreaking. So, I mean, I've never heard of biomarkers until recently, but is that kind of a discovery that someone made and said, oh, look at this?
You know, I think it started really with in 2009, 2010, with the discovery of the EGFR mutation, which is one of the most common mutations we see in lung cancer. And that that discovery that some patients, about 15 to 20% of patients have a mutation in a gene that can respond really, really well to a medicine that targets that protein.
Hmm, interesting.
And when we found out that these people really do well with that drug, then the search went on, what are the other markers? So if we know that 15 or 20% have EGFR, maybe there are other mutations that we can target specifically. And so now we have EGFR, we have ALK, which is another 7 or 8% of patients. We have ROS1, which is another 1%. We have BRAF, which is another 1%. HER2, which is 2 to 4%.
Huh.
CMET, which is another 1 or 2%. And then the big one was like a couple years ago, we developed a therapy for patients with KRAS G12C mutations, which accounts for maybe about 30% of lung cancer. So that's a huge piece of the pie there where we can offer them a specific therapy. So with each passing year, we're finding a new target that we can treat specifically. So again, NRG is another 0.5 or 0.1% slice of lung cancer that we can target. So all of these things to say is that, you know, we really want to get to the fine detail. What is your lung cancer look like and how are we going to treat it specifically to talk about personalized medicine.
Yeah.
What is your cancer look like and how are we going to treat it?
And Dr. Patel, wouldn't you say that it's really important that if you're diagnosed with lung cancer to make sure that if you haven't been biomarker tested to request it so that before you move forward with treatment, you have the most informed decision about exactly your type of cancer so that you can treat it specifically for better outcomes?
Yeah. Thanks, Terry. What we know is that even though, you know, probably now for 15 years, we know that we about this EGFR biomarker, there's still, if you look globally, only about 40% of patients with metastatic lung cancer ever get biomarker tested, which is astonishing, really, given, you know, that's 15-year-old data. We're not doing as well as at doing this testing. And so I think Terry's question goes to the point for those of you out there that if you get the diagnosis of lung cancer, you know, really make sure that you're getting biomarker tested because it's not being done routinely. And, you know, it's sort of in my view, a little bit sad that as patients, we have to tell, you know, other people, other providers to do what they're supposed to do. But on the other hand, you know, if you're aware of it, you know, it makes sense to try to, you know, help your doctor out to try to get the thing that you need. You know, a breath of hope, and this has become a very big focus of our work to really educate the oncologists, the health systems in our state, to make sure that every patient gets a biomarker tested right at the time of diagnosis. And this is an active initiative that we're working on to try to make sure that every patient has the information that will lead to the best treatment for that patient.
All right, we are going to take our final break of the hour. Again, you are listening to our Health Hour here on WCCO Radio. Dr. Manish Patel, University of Minnesota, and Terry Cannon, Executive Director of A Breath of Hope. And we're talking about lung cancer and new technology, new research that hopefully will help people live longer lives. In the past, people have died of lung cancer and more people are living. But still, more attention needs to be put on lung cancer as it is a deadly form of cancer. We're going to talk a little bit more about that as we wrap up the hour here on News Talk 830 WCCO. It is 7:51 on a Sunday morning. I'm Susie Jones. Wrapping up this hour, we're talking about lung cancer with Dr. Manish Patel, and Terry Cannon is Executive Director of A Breath of Hope. Big walk coming up, walk, run, or just rally to raise money for research into lung cancer, raising awareness. And before we run out of time, Terry, I just want to kind of give you a minute here to talk about how people can get involved in that, and if they can't actually walk, what can they do?
Sure. So anyone can just show up at Lake Harriet Bandshell on Saturday morning on August 9th at 7:30 to get signed up. We'd love if everyone registered early so that we can expect how many people will be there. But again, we want no barriers. Registration is free at abreathofhope.org. You can sign up online or show up at Lake Harriet Bandshell. And our goal of the walk is to raise awareness and funds so that we can support our mission of advancing lung cancer research, education, and support.
And you mentioned that people can do that by going to support.abreathofhope.org. Is that it?
Correct. You can go to support.abreathofhope.org. You can register. And if you can't come, just donate.
Any little bit.
Any little bit will help. Our goal is to raise both awareness and funds to support the mission.
And the mission is to find it early enough to treat it, and hopefully people can go on to live healthy lives.
Exactly. The more we can have early detection through screening, and then realize that even if you detected lung cancer in stage 3 or 4, there are still treatments. Through the biomarker tests and the targeted therapies that Dr. Patel talked about.
And Dr. Patel, as we sort of run out of time here, for lack of a better word, the last handful of questions are all kind of from people who are saying they've been exposed, whether secondhand smoke, and maybe they now have a chronic cough. Is the recommendation to talk to their primary provider and say, hey, I've had this chronic cough because of my history or being around smoke, and what can they essentially do?
Yeah, I mean, I think it really does come back to the primary care physician and, you know, talk to your doctor about if you're concerned about your risk, and you have, certainly if you have respiratory symptoms, probably, you know, you could you could probably try to get a scan. I think the current problem is that it's, you know, lung cancer screening scans per se is not covered by insurance. And so, you know, you have to kind of have some other reason to get a CT scan. Mm-hmm. But I think if you talk with your primary care physician and talk about the symptoms that you're having, it makes sense even if you can only get a chest X-ray. I mean, I think, you know, it's a little bit reassuring to know that you don't see something there.
Yeah. Someone wanted to know, is a heart calcium score in any way related to lung cancer? There are different organs. I would say not, but you.
No, they're not related. But oftentimes, you know, I've seen this where patients get diagnosed off of a calcium score because they can see part of the lungs and identify a nodule.
Cool. And is there any long-term effects of long-term radiation if you get a lot of CT scans?
I mean, I think the amount of CT scans that we're talking about would equate to a couple of the amount of radiation exposure you get from a cross-country flight. Oh. So I don't think it's really anything that's of major concern.
That's good, because I've had more than 5 of them.
Yeah.
I get them every 6 months.
Low dose.
But I like to get them. I like to see that no sign of recurrence. That's what I look for. I can now read my own report. Well, you know, you guys have both been great for coming in, Terry and Dr. Patel, for getting up this early. I really appreciate it, because I do think there is work to be done, and this is all about helping people live healthy lives. So thank you, Dr. Patel, for coming on.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
And Terry, thanks for coming in.
Of course.
And remind people again, if they just want to show up on Saturday, you're going to be August 9th at Lake Harriet. What time should they get there if they want to?
7:30 in the morning, and the festivities are going to be going on. We've got an opening ceremony at 9 o'clock, and the walk kicks off right after that.
Great. Thanks, both. We're back after this with Your Money.